Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 221. Tonight's show is brought to you by No Compression.
And Kenny is fired up tonight.
Kenny is fired up. So I'm talking. I am going to tell you what I've been doing for the last 2 weeks, which is I'm going to go as quickly as possible so we can get into bicycle stuff, but long story short, there is going to be a national at Turkey Rock, the local outdoor permanent trials designated zone in Howard, Colorado, right down the road from my house. And we've been establishing where we're going to go and whatnot. And I have taken it upon myself to be the official, unofficial trail steward. And I have rebuilt a ton of trail for increasing the usability for a wider range of users for the upcoming national event. And I have put in, Andrea helped with one of them, but I did one huge hole fill in and built three grade reversals and cut in a new part of bench on one part of trail. And I put in on another part of trail, I widened the trail in three spots that are pretty big. So I've been using those as workouts. Anytime you pick up a big rock and toss it in a hole, you're like, that's a workout. Getting tough. So that's what I've been doing. I did a bunch of work on my moto. I was like, I didn't think of that till this instant, but kind of like in the movie Dodgeball, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. If you can tear apart a fork, you can tear, or if you can tear apart a pike, you can tear apart a 2012 Marzocchi 40 millimeter aluminum trials fork. So I rebuilt the fork on my trials bike and rebuilt the headset. It's the steering stem bearings headset in our world. And I just got a good bit of work done on that and wrote up a huge parts list because I'm going to keep riding that bike. It's pretty low hours, but just some of it's time and some of it's, I've been pretty hard on it because trials bikes hit the ground a lot. So I'm going to call the dudes at Trials Superstore or Trial Store USA, whichever one's in Arizona. I can never keep it straight. It's Trials Superstore. I'm going to call them tomorrow and give them a lot of my American currency. Let's see. Moving on.
How many hours do you usually get on a two-stroke top end on one of those?
We haven't gotten that far yet.
Hundreds. I don't know. Mine's fine.
Is it, do you know, like, generally speaking, is it like motocross intervals or is it longer than that?
It's, I would assume it's longer because of the way the bike is ridden. You know, there's a lot of idle in trials and
sure,
there's not a lot of just pinning it and like flogging the dog shit out of it. Like, even the things that seem like you're flogging it, you do it for like 2 seconds. So
sure.
You know, it's not getting like pinned in third, held wide open through the berms and stuff, you know, or fifth.
I think in the motocross world, two-stroke top ends are like 100 hours, 150 hours, something like that.
Nah, I think you're going to get a good bit more than that out of this.
Cool.
I mean, if you might get 150 hours of like motocross level use out of it, but that probably translates into like a couple of years of trials riding.
Yeah, probably.
Because and that's the amount of just like putting
and well and
whatnot. I would slow speed riding.
I would say too, you know, if I go out and do a trials event that takes all day, you know, it takes me 3 hours to do my three loops, but a lot of that is engine off even. And then
so in like in your riding group, like all your buddies, do you ever overhear anyone talking about like, oh, I'm doing a top end or something like that?
You know, I've heard of it, but like the dude that I know that does it probably puts like 10 to 16 hours a week on his bike. And then another person that I know that needed to do a top end, it was like a brand new bike that ate a head gasket like in the first 8 hours. So
gotcha.
One was a fluke and one gets the shit ridden out of it.
Do those things run radiator fans?
Yeah.
Cool.
Thermostat controlled radiators. So, or thermostat controlled radiator fan. So yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a super simple thermostat. It like doesn't open and close. It just, so the, it's always open, but the fan runs on a little, I don't know what it's called. It's got like a little heat switch in it that just completes the circuit and turns the fan on. So
would that be a solenoid?
I don't know. But
I think that's just a switch. thermo switch.
Thermo switch. There we go.
I got a story about one of those.
Well, wait your fucking turn, Susan.
I will.
Let's see. I don't know if we've recorded since I put shocks on the Jeep. And amazingly, man, you put shocks on something that I knew this needed shocks, but I had never driven a Jeep that didn't. Like, this is the only one I've driven. And, like, boy, howdy, did that make a difference. It's pretty amazing.
So, fun fact. I have had / have 3 vehicles with over 200,000 miles. I've never replaced a shock in my entire life.
That's fine, Kenny, but you don't live where I live.
No, I'm just saying, like, isn't that crazy?
Ah.
But also, I've only ever owned import vehicles. So,
well, we also, that might say something. Like, the last, I don't know, half mile to our house, you use your suspension.
That's what I was going to say is...
A little bit. You can drive the Subaru from, like, the maintained county road to our house. Like, it's not like there's, you know, stuff that's going to break a normal car, but you use your suspension. Like, it gets used.
I guess what I'm saying, if you buy like an F-150, after 60,000 miles, your shocks don't work anymore.
And what I'm trying to say is, if you lived on a dirt road and drove washboard every time you drove your vehicle, you probably would have put shocks in one of the vehicles you own, is my guess.
That's on one hand, that's reasonable. But on the other hand, all 3 of those vehicles, 2 of which are cars, have probably seen more off-road use than anyone's F-150.
Yeah, but again...
Not every day.
It's
in and out.
It's like there's one corner on the way to my house that it's like, oh shit, I need shocks. And it you're going uphill, it's a sweeper left-hand corner, and suddenly the rear end wants to be beside you, not behind you, and you're like, oh, I'm out of damping. So I think it's just one of those things that it's death by 1,000 cuts, or, you know, X number of miles of corrugation, washboard, wherever country you live in. And it's one of those deals where your tolerance for it is a lot lower if you're actively driving the car on the way home. Like, it's just... Yeah, I stand by that. You might have had really good ones and they were all just fine, but I don't know. It's...
Oh, I'm not saying that if I didn't put new shocks on any of my cars, they wouldn't be better, but they're not, like, obviously bad. I'm just very surprised because so many other people get, like, way sub 100,000 miles out of a set of shocks, usually on a domestic truck that usually only sees pavement. It's just very funny.
Yeah. I mean, the Subaru got to 102,000 and I put shocks on it. So, I mean, one of them was an import and... The shocks lasted on my Nissan for 7 years, so that's pretty good. But, I mean, that truck only has... I've only put 32,000 miles on that truck, and I put shocks on it after I moved to Salida, and I put shocks on it again, put half of them on already. I'm going to put the other half on, depending on how much it snows here pretty soon. And then...
So can you cover the difference between Salida and Howard?
15 miles, 30 minutes.
Is Howard is a suburb of Salida?
Not really.
I would call it a...
It's just a small rural community. It's not really part of Salida. Like, you definitely... You know, it's not like one of those things where we say we live in Howard, but our mailing address is Salida. It's Howard. You know, we got our own post office.
How many stoplights do you have as a city?
None.
Zero.
We don't even have a stop sign.
There's not a stop sign. Like, yeah,
like the highway doesn't have a stop sign. The only stop signs are where...
Zero.
Like, we don't have a stoplight. We don't have a gas station. We have a liquor store and 2 campground, 3...
But you guys can't even afford stop signs?
They don't need stop
signs. What do you need a stop sign for?
The highway just goes through Howard
when,
and then there's, like, side roads.
Anytime that one road meets another
road... There's stop signs there, but, like, when you drive through Howard... The highway has the right-of-way the entire way, and there's no...
Sure.
There's no place that has enough traffic to necessitate a traffic light.
Yeah, like, the speed limit goes from 55 to 45, and you drive whatever it is, like, the 3 or 4 miles through Howard, and then it goes back up to 55, and you're on your way to the next little community.
So, commercial establishments, there is a liquor store?
Yes.
And, like, there's, like, 3 RV parks.
There's 3 RV parks. There's a restaurant.
Okay, nice.
There is a...
Volunteer fire department,
and there is a welder.
A vet's office.
What else?
A self-storage.
Yeah, there's Jay's self-storage. That's it.
No Costco,
no City
Market.
You gotta
go all
Colorado
Springs.
No Safeway, no hardware store, no gas station, nothing.
Could you imagine if a Costco moved to Salida, people would lose their freaking
It would
minds.
Go out of business. Yeah, it would. But
you think so?
There's only like only like 25 or 30,000 people in the whole fucking county.
Well, yeah, but everyone would go to every single one of those people would go to Costco.
Well, they go to Walmart now.
Yeah. So anyways, trying to keep this moving forward, I sold my bird wheels. I installed the bird wheels on the recipient's bicycle. I installed my Roval wheels onto my, got a pair of Traverse 2s with 350 hubs with ratchet free hub. I installed those onto.
So they're good old school?
No, they're ratchet single. No, they're EXP. Old school. Yeah, yeah. They're old school.
So like
it's got two ratchets and two springs.
Fuck me. Yes, it is. Yep.
Okay. So it's two ratchets, two springs?
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. That's old school classic. That's the one you want.
Yeah, it is.
You sound like bummed out by this news.
I may have made a decision in haste that I didn't need to. It doesn't matter. We're going to keep moving.
You bought the wrong free hub body?
I bought a free hub body I didn't need.
Man.
Oh, well. It's just a free hub. And then I got my bike set up on the trainer the rest of the way, and I rode the trainer tonight before we recorded. So, oh, and I went indoor climbing, and I rode the trainer. So I've done some bike stuff finally. There we go. And if you are a tall person or you have a long torso, you should buy the black bibs. They make three, I'm going to say at least three cuts of bibs. They do a normal bib that fits like normal. They do a bib with longer straps, and they do a bib that has longer straps and longer legs. And I got the ones with longer straps, and I can pee out of the top of the bibs without contorting myself into a pretzel shape and strangling my last remaining testicle. So that's pretty much all that I got. I'm trying to think if there's anything else cool to talk about. No, that's it. Kenny?
I got nothing really cool. Haven't done any like moto or bike trips. I'm probably going to go somewhere this weekend. It's finally getting pretty cold and snowy. It's still not like amazing in other parts of Utah. Like whatever rain spell or snow or whatever comes through, it's kind of hitting the whole state equally. Where a lot of times if you go down south or if you like go to the Moab area, it's like a little bit of a reprieve from that. But it's been kind of crappy everywhere. So I haven't done a whole lot of stuff. Yeah, I kind of got, like I said, I got that notice from, you know, Utah asking me about, you know, why I haven't bought any guns this year or whatever. So I, picked up a few things and been shooting some guns at some steel. And yeah, it's pretty fun. It's a good time.
Cool.
So if anyone is even, you know, mildly interested in firearms, shooting steel targets is a lot of fun. I've always had some, but I got some more, and it's a good time. It's way more fun than just like shooting a piece of paper.
Yeah, that's what at the range, like the Chaffee County has a wonderful shooting range, and they have after like at 200 yards, I think you have like one or two steel targets you can shoot, and then like there's some boards for paper. But anything past that is all steel targets, and it's a lot of fun because like you just get to hear the noise.
Well, yeah, you get feedback.
Yeah, the noise is cool. I like
fun.
The noise.
But for, you know, doing pistol stuff, if you're, you know, 50 feet kind of thing, relatively, well, for a pistol, that's far, but you know, keeping it a nice safe distance, you got 50 feet, and you just have a whole bunch of like large-ish steel target set up, and yeah, it's just way more entertaining. You can do more stuff rather than just like sitting there trying to do precision pistol shooting at a paper target. It's like kind of lame, honestly. But you know, being able to like move around and do stuff and shoot multiple different steel targets is pretty entertaining. So anyway, been doing some of that. What else is going on? I think that's really it. I think before the show, we were just talking about everybody's disdain of the modern internet and the inshittification of all things IT.
I blame AI.
I blame lazy people and people that are just out to make a site to make some make some quick money. There's just not a whole lot of, and I say this as a very blanket statement. I know there's a lot of people that really take a lot of pride in the things that they do. I guarantee, like at Microsoft, for example, there's a lot of core engineers who are really, really good at their job and really care and are making everything as streamlined as possible and as efficient as possible. And they care about what other dorky people care about, which is like a great operating system. But then I guarantee they get told by the higher ups, well, we need to just cram AI in every corner of Windows and you got to add all this shit. And they're like, God damn it. And they just have to like bloatware the software that they took a bunch of pride in making awesome. And now it's garbage because there's a million processes running and everything runs like shit. Anyway, that's my little disdain, is how crappy things run on really awesome modern hardware. It's pretty insane. Like, Andrea and I were talking, at least I have a fairly modern iPhone. I assume Andrea probably does as well. And you go to a...
It's I think an XR, which is not really that modern, but...
That's a little older for sure.
Yeah.
But there's no reason that shouldn't run a whole bunch of stuff. Like, it's still pretty impressive hardware. But you go to a simple website like Weather Underground and your damn phone gets physically hot. It's just absurd that that happens in this day and age. That's just insane. It's not like you're trying to do it on 20-year-old hardware, like pulling it up on a BlackBerry or something. This is like a pretty awesome, modern, powerful phone. But anyway, it's just a bummer because I know stuff can be so much better, but they just, even if it was decent bones underneath, they just fill it up on top with ads and all the other garbage that comes with it. So
yeah, there's definitely some websites that I cannot look at on my phone because so many ads open up that like, you try to hit the X, which is the size of like a ballpoint.
A gnat's cloaca.
Yeah, it's like a ballpoint pen. And it's like, oh, you opened this other website with the ad. Yeah. Old man yells at cloud.
Yep. Yeah. I wish people took a little bit more pride in their stuff. And I wish that some people weren't greedy out to make a quick buck by cramming a whole bunch of ads and shit. But that's the world we live in.
Welcome to capitalism.
Jesus Christ.
What?
Well, I'm scheming some things, and I'm trying to find some light tires, and I was like, oh, man, I wonder what a Vittoria Peyote weighs, and oh, my God, not only does it weigh more than an Aspen by, like, 40 grams, it retails for $107. Jesus, fuck. Vittoria must be getting the good cocaine in Bentonville. Jesus Christ.
We've been carrying more of their stuff, and it's mildly popular. People seem to like it.
Yeah, I just can't.
It's like that thing where, like, for a long time, Maxxis was, I don't know. I mean, they still make really good tires. I'm not saying their product has slipped at all, but...
Others are catching up.
Yeah, others are catching up. So there's just a lot more options out there that are actually good. They're just also $107 a tire.
That's a lot of money.
Is it my turn to go now, or is Kenny still talking?
No, that's it. That's all I got. I, you know, didn't do a whole lot of stuff and yelled at a cloud.
I yell at clouds every day. It's okay. I've been doing mostly the same stuff. My thumb that I cut, I think last time we talked, I was going to get the stitches out soon, and like one or two of the stitches had like pulled through the skin. Well, turns out almost all of them ended up doing that, and I went to get the stitches out, and they're like, yeah, you just come back to the emergency room and it'll just be like a, you know, we you don't get charged for it. The nurse will just take you back and take the stitches out. Well, he looked at it, and he's like, I'm gonna have the doctor come and look at this. And yeah, the doctor comes in and he's like, yeah, your stitches have dehisced, which is the whatever the medical term for they aren't holding like stitches should anymore. Then he gave me, he's like, it has to heal through, it's called secondary intention, which is basically just, it's going to be an open wound that has to heal from the inside out. And then he gave me bad information about how to deal with that. He told me, you know, the skin around the incision had kind of turned like white, like it was very moist. And he's like, yeah, you should just leave the bandage off at night and let it dry all the way out. I started researching. I just went to, and I don't mean do my own research, like watch some unhinged YouTube video from, I don't know, like homeschoolnovaxmom.com. I went to Google Scholar and started looking at wound care practices. And it turns out letting a secondary intention wound dry out all of the way is like the second worst thing you could do to it. First worst being like take the bandage off and rub it in a pile of like dog poop. So I, you know, got the proper healing, whatever, like ointments and bandages and stuff like that. And it's healing up really well. It's slow, but it, I mean, every time I change the bandage, it's like noticeably better. But I can only think of like, if they told someone who didn't know that, I don't know, Google Scholar or like some reliable internet sources exist, like if they had told someone else to do that, like they'd have problems with it, which is really unfortunate because I don't know. I feel like if you're an expert in a field, and I'm not saying the doctor didn't know, it was an emergency room doctor. I think part of being an expert is knowing what you don't know and referring someone to someone who might know better.
I mean, why don't you go back and ask? And maybe there's a reason why they think that way.
I'm not going to go back to the emergency room and be like, hey, can I talk to that doctor who told me this? But like, I don't know. I just feel like, you know, in that situation, if it's like a, I don't know, something that might need a specialist, you pretty much was like, yeah, if it doesn't look good in a few days, then, you know, follow up with your primary care doctor. Well, to schedule an appointment with a primary care doctor in Salida, it takes a month. It's literally a month if you're already a patient. If you're a new patient, like if I didn't already have a primary care doctor, it would be 2 months. So, you know, that's like not a really good, I don't know, it just wasn't a very good solution to that. You know, like it should have been something like you need to go to a wound specialist, like whoever would know more information about that. And that's, I don't know, I just feel like that's part of being like really good at your job, because I'm sure that that doctor is really good at being an emergency room doctor, but wound care is just not his specialty. So why wouldn't you say like, you know, I'm not 100% sure, or you don't even have to say that. You should say, you know, I'm looking at this and I think that you should see, you know, whatever wound care, you know, go here and talk to them about it. Like, I don't know. It seemed really, I don't know, the stereotypical American healthcare situation of where they're just trying to get you like in and out and out of the way, like as quickly as possible.
I mean, it sucks that he maybe gave you like not accurate information, but wouldn't you be just as mad or more mad if he said, well, I can't tell you what to do next. You have to go set another appointment with someone else. You would be furious.
I don't think I'd be furious. I mean, I'm not really happy with either situation, but I think I would rather have a doctor tell me like, this isn't my area of specialty and you would be best off to see a specialist in this area. And yeah, it would suck to have to like set another appointment. And honestly, I probably, knowing that I'm capable of reading, you know, slightly what would be like over the head of a lot of people, like knowing that I can like kind of figure that stuff out on my own using the internet that's available, I probably wouldn't have set up another appointment. But just for him to say like, I'm not sure, and I don't want to give you bad advice, but instead he's like, I'm just going to give you some what I think is good, even though it might not be right. That's a lot less confidence inspiring. But I mean, I'm glad that it's healing up. It feels a lot better. I can actually kind of use my thumb now and it doesn't hurt. And it hasn't had any signs of infection or whatever. So, I mean, it's turning out okay, but it could have been kind of bad. But other than that, what else have I been doing? I had stuff in my head. Matt, what was the thing that I said I have a story about?
Thermocouplers, thermo switches.
Oh, yeah. So this is for anyone that has animals, or, you know, I have chickens. You might have other animals that live outside and need, in the wintertime, some method of keeping your water for those animals from freezing. I have a chicken water that's heated, keeps the water from freezing, and it broke. It stopped. It was letting the water freeze. And I took it apart and it smelled like burning wires inside. And what I figured out was that the thermostat, this little silver circular thing, had stopped working. And I was able to figure out which one I needed and replace it. And if anyone has a water heater for their animals, and actually this is the same part that's in like coffee, I mean, it's in like coffee thermostats. It's in like a bunch of different home appliances, anything that has any sort of a thermostat is probably one of these things. It's like $10 for five of them, and they're really cheap. You just have to be able to figure out like what temperature range you want it to operate in, and you can replace it. So that was a major accomplishment in my last 2 weeks, is I fixed my chicken's water.
There you go. Very cool.
New shit time.
Yeah, we can do some new shit.
Sure.
You want to do sad stuff first?
Sure.
Joe Montgomery, founder of Cannondale, has passed away. Dude was 86
years
old.
I never heard that name a lot.
Well, you know, I think it's one of those things. I don't know how public he was, but like he did start what gave me my road race bike and my first road bike too. So I don't know.
What's interesting about this, just a few numbers. So Cannondale declared bankruptcy in 2003. I think a lot of that was due to a lot of things, but I think them trying to build that motocross bike was a big part of it. But anyway, they got sold to a private equity firm for $58 million, so in 2003. And then in 2008, so 5 years later, sold for $190 million. So if you want to know why some of these private equity firms want to try to do what they do, it's because holy shit, yeah, in 5 years, went from $58 million to $190 million. So that's pretty crazy. And then another kind of 10, 12, 14 years later, sold to Durrell. Wait, hold on. Maybe I got that wrong. Oh, no, sorry. Durrell sold it to Pond for $810 million.
Jesus Christ.
So just huge, huge like leaps and bounds that they're selling this company for. So somebody in that company was doing things. Now, whether or not it was actually worth that amount of money, don't know, but pretty wild. Those are really big jumps.
Yeah. Now, less sad news because he's still alive. Calvin Jones of Park Tool is retiring.
I've seen him in a few videos.
I don't think his videos are for us, but I think his videos have probably, I'm going to be sincere at first and then cheeky in the second half, is a lot of people have fixed their bikes through his instruction, and a lot of people have fucked their shit up and brought it to us when they couldn't figure it out.
There you go.
Yeah. So, I don't know. He's old, though, and he's going to go do whatever he wants now. He's probably never going to work on a bicycle in front of a camera again, which is probably good for him. God, he's got that shop shirt all tucked in this photo, like, from the 90s, probably. Early. Look at that. That's so, like, 2007, actually. Yeah.
He's got kind of a Scott Banks vibe going on there.
He does, yeah. He's,
I don't remember if Scott tucks his shirts in.
I can't remember either. I should text him right now. He'd probably call.
He'd be like, what?
Let's see. In other industry news, Wheels Manufacturing has purchased Miracle and Incredible. God, I pronounced both of those wrong. Miracle, which is the...
I've always read that as Miracycle in my head, so
I have too.
Yeah, I think mirror... I always read it as like Miracycle, M-I-R-R cycle, as in like mirror.
Except
and
it's,
cycle.
It's M-I-R-R-Y.
C-L-E. C-L-E. There's not a first C. There's only the last C. So it's Miracle and Incredibelle. Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. I like their products. They make that...
Slightly tangent. I can't believe that Genuine Innovations allowed themselves to just go away. I can't believe that that didn't pass hands to someone else. That makes no sense to me.
Don't they make like CO2 inflators or something?
CO2 inflators and tire
plugs.
They
do. They were like the ubiquitous inflator. They made perfectly good stuff and they made a whole bunch of stuff. And surely all that stuff had paid for itself a long, long time ago. All the R&D and molds and shit. Like surely that was just done. Were they just getting so much pressure from direct to consumer stuff? Surely not. Like every bike shop in the world sold Genuine Innovation products. Everywhere I've ever worked, I just, very weird to me that that company would just decide to walk away from the business completely. I can't believe they found no buyer and just walked away. That doesn't make any sense to me. Even selling that company, if the family wanted out and they had their money and they just wanted to be done with it, didn't want to deal with daily operations anymore, I can't believe that there wasn't any effort to get someone to buy that for some amount of money. Just mind-boggling to me. And maybe there's a backstory there, and maybe it's going to pop up somewhere, but I'm just very surprised that I didn't hear anything about it at the time, like when Genuine Innovations went under. So weird.
Oh, here we go. So genuine innovations. I found an article from, remember when things used to give you a date at the top? Let's see.
Yeah, it's really helpful.
January 31st of 25. So let's see.
Another almost a year ago.
And this website is fully crashing my computer. The challenges faced. Wait, that's just talking. It's a joint article about Q laying people off then and genuine innovations closing. Closed down by its parent company, Illinois Toolworks. Let's see. Put down to a rise in competition. Faced increasing challenges as the market became more commoditized. With the rise of low cost and private label competitors, the brand was squeezed out. Bittersweet for us to say goodbye. We've been proud to support riders for many years. Illinois Toolworks, which also owns Slime, would concentrate on automotive offerings. Yeah, so it sounds like maybe Illinois Toolworks decided that
it's
they...
Just Illinois, there's no S on the end.
You can say it any way you want, Matt.
I'm just done talking.
But isn't it crazy? To me, that sounds like pure laziness on the part of somebody. I thought maybe I was reading an article about the history of them when they used to be like family owned. I can't believe that they wanted $0 for that company. And yes, is there more competition? 100%. But we were still buying a ton of it. I'll bet you in wholesale dollars, just our shop, we probably spent $10,000 to $20,000 a year in Genuine Innovations products. It's just crazy that they were like, nope, we don't want to do it anymore.
It's probably also because so many people just stopped carrying any type of flat repair stuff and just, you know, I got tubeless. I don't need flat repair.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably a little bit of it. It's not quite as popular as it used to be, but we still sell plenty of patch kits and inflators and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, my God.
Random tangent.
ITW, which is what they go by, because I'm not going to say the state name again.
Illinois.
They own Rain-X, Permatex, Hobart, Vulcan, Passload, Tapcon, and other welding and specialty products. So, like... What do you want to sell? Do you want to sell 19 pluggers or one nail gun? Oh, my God.
I get it.
Hold on.
I totally get it that it's not their core competency. But the fact that they apparently made no effort to sell that to someone else is pretty mind-blowing to me. I guarantee somebody would have bought Genuine Innovations. Sell it to freaking like Holley or BTI or like one of these distributors. Be like, yo, you can in-house brand this or whatever you want to do. Go nuts.
I didn't find it on their website. I found it now. They own Rain-X, Black Magic, Gum Out, Permatex, Spray 9, Fast Orange, Devcon Home, The Right Stuff, Versachem, Slime, and Fix-A-Flat, and Evercoat. So, I mean,
a bunch of automotive stuff.
Like, I understand you're saying they walked away from it, but the other thing that I would ask is like, and I'm going to use Q because they already have their own brands. Why would Q buy Genuine Innovations instead of launching, you know, problem solvers, bacon forks, you know, like, I guess, I mean, you're...
What I'm saying is it was, everything was there. It worked. There was a whole line of this stuff. It existed. It had a name. All the supply chain and stuff was there, and all someone had to do is just pick it up and run with it. That's just really, really weird to me. I'm still something doesn't sound right in that. The fact that somebody at ITW wasn't like, yo, would we rather have $10 million and never see this brand again or have $0 and never see this brand again? And someone said $0. That is crazy.
I don't know.
What if they shopped it, though, and everybody told them to pound sand?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. If I was in charge at ITW in any way, shape, or form, and I gave that project to one of my people, and they came up completely empty, like $0. We have this brand that's been around for like 40 years, and we are actively selling X amount per year worldwide, which is probably in the many, many, many millions of dollars. Like probably, I'm just spitballing here. Surely it had to have been $20 million a year, at least at wholesale. And they couldn't find a single buyer for that at just, let's say, half of revenue. Like, yo, we're going to sell this company for $10 million. That's bananas to me.
Yeah, but as a bike shop, I don't know. I understand where you're coming from, but also, like,
maybe they just...
Well, let me finish. It's really easy for me to stock a Lazine inflator beside my Lazine pressure drive pumps. It's really easy to stock a muck off plugger beside my muck off cleaning products. Like, maybe, I mean, they said they cited market pressure. Like,
maybe it just wasn't making as much money and they,
yeah, maybe the pretty pink packaging for muck off got it. I don't know.
Oh, I'm not saying that their sales had been decreasing. Just weird. Totally weird to me. I just really wonder what those behind the scenes conversations were. Maybe someone absolutely tried everything they possibly could. But the fact that nobody wanted that brand is, that's really weird to me. Something doesn't smell right.
Well, oh, but also think about this, though. Have you met, like, they went out of business. Did you have any problems replacing the stuff that they made with someone else's?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I was used to buying their stuff and it was pretty easy, and they hit a lot of the different price points and features that people were looking for, from the super basic twist only inflator with no moving parts to the actual canisters. Even though I got my canisters typically from other people who were a little bit cheaper, I still carried a whole lot of genuine innovation stuff, like the hammerheads and the, I can't remember the name of the no moving parts one, but between the hammerhead and the no moving part,
the microflate nano.
Yeah, there you go. We sold a ton of them.
All right, Kenny, I just came up with one other thing for you and we can move on.
Okay.
I mean, I read off, you know, and I'm just going to use, what was it? Fast Orange, the hand cleaner, right? That's sold in Walmart, AutoZone, and O'Reilly's, right?
Sure.
So I know you're saying, like, they couldn't get $10 million out of this and your mind is blown. What if old man Jim at ITW came up with a solution? Like, they obviously already had a huge wealth of, like, sourcing and manufacturing experience, right? What if there was some cyclist dude that was like, I want to make this shit and sell it to bike shops. And as he retired, and I'm just going to use your $20 million. Like, if you think they were doing $20 million in genuine inflations or genuine innovations, how much do you think they were doing in Fast Orange alone? You know,
I'm and not where saying I'm that going it was is one. It was probably less than 1% of their business as a conglomerate and all the shit that they
and
do.
It could have been.
But the fact that someone at a company has a, like, established semi cash cow product and wants to walk away from it for $0, zero sense to me.
But what if old man Jim retired and the company, just like the number cruncher, went through and it was like, well, we need 40 employees to do this 1%, but we do the other 99% with not 99 times 40 employees.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not saying that ITW should have moved forward with genuine innovations at all. That's not the point at all. I think they probably should have walked away from it. But the fact that they couldn't find a consultant or someone internally in their company to go fucking pick up the phone and walk around and offer this company for any amount of dollars to someone to just take it away from them. Like, that's either, hey, you do a little bit of work. We're going to pay someone. We're going to pay a consultant $100,000 to go figure this out. All they would have to do after paying that consultant $100,000 is go make more than $100,000 on the thing. And there's more to it than
maybe,
that. There's probably tax implications and all kinds of shit.
Maybe they called around and were asking who wants to buy this. And, like, Lazine called them or whatever and was like, yo, we'll give you $100,000 if you just drop it. And
you might be right. That could be
market.
A thing. Yeah. I don't know if that's explicitly legal.
That doesn't matter.
To do it's that, to be honest. But you might be right. There could have been something like that that happened. I'm just, something in my brain is not comprehending this. That's just such a weird thing. Like, people, this is gold. People want established brands that people know about that are semi-cash cow. And the fact that it just went away with no buyer, just weird. So anyway, that's 30 minutes talking about genuine innovations and people probably don't give a shit, but just one of those weird little things. Maybe we'll find out in a few years what actually happened, but something doesn't add up to me.
All right. Continuing with new shit. Wolftooth is now making floating axles for your Fox Forks. And you can,
do you know why that's
color
stupid?
Coordinate.
Because you'll see none of the color.
Exactly. You got all this anno,
you got,
and
one
it's hidden
little
inside
dot.
Your goddamn fork.
It's one little dot of color.
I'm going to give you, well, what's the MSRP?
I know what they should do.
What's the MSRP, Andrea? Scroll down. I didn't bother opening it because I didn't give a shit.
I don't know if it says. I'm going to look at the website. which may or...
If it is the same price or cheaper than the OEM, okay, great. Make that. Oh. And if you want to make it in colors, that's cool. But holy shit, it's all hidden.
No.
That would be like selling an air spring for a fork that's anodized.
No,
purple.
It's not. I'm going to give you one reason. Okay, it's $40. I'm going to give you one reason to buy this. When you set it down, it's easier to find again.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the...
No, I don't disagree with that. Some neon color. I think that's reasonable.
And just hear me out. Because it's going to live inside your fork, the ano won't fade.
You know, I think if I had an all-black bike, which I tend to do, I do like an all-black bike. If every single part on the bike was black, I would get the gold axle.
And then you would have gold that didn't match your Kashima. Good job.
Okay, well, I would get a purple one then.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. Just that one tiny little circle of ano to just grab your eye on the all-black bike, I think that's pretty classy. You want me to keep going? I got one more that I think is kind of cool.
Yeah, and then I have one.
So this is a good one for anyone who rides a small or medium bike, which often have the seat tube water bottle cage or water bottle bosses left off because of whatever, fuck you. We just don't want to fit it there. You can get this nice little mount from Tailfin that straps around any of the tubes on your bike, and it holds two little water bottle bosses. So you can strap this on and then bolt a cage to it, and it looks pretty secure. I mean, just looking at this, it looks like a good, it's got the rubberized, you know, like, I mean, what we call them, ski straps, but I don't know what the
Volley strap style thing.
Yeah, like that looks pretty good. It's $28 for the base. Or you can get a three-strap version for $35.
Pretty sick. So you got a size small frame. It won't fit a bottle in the seat tube. And then you can buy this thing to mount it in that position. And then your bottle still won't fucking fit.
Well, you get a side exit cage and you have to use a small bottle. I mean, it's not perfect on this frame. I've definitely had that situation before where, like, the bottle, like, you can't fit all bottles in there.
Well, Kenny, too, some of it comes down to not necessarily that a bottle won't fit, but the bottle boss would prevent your dropper seat post from fitting.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty reasonable. And I've used products like this before, like a very cheesy, I'm going to say like Delta or somebody made it. I can't remember who.
Yeah, there have been.
But we had those Velcro rubber ones. They, you know, they fit a purpose. So I don't know, you have some weird contraption, some tandem or a recumbent or something weird, then you need a bottle cage on a round tube. You slap this thing on there and there you go.
Yeah, this is definitely like a much nicer version of the stuff that's already out there. They show it holding a Nalgene, like the triple strap version, holding a Nalgene bottle, which that could definitely get a little bit rowdy. So if that actually holds, that's pretty amazing. But I do like that because a lot of manufacturers that make stuff to mount, I don't know, stuff other than a water bottle to your frame using the already existing mounts on your frame, they don't really take into account, like, they don't warn people, like, hey, this really, like, this thing on your frame was made to hold the weight of a full water bottle. And they just don't mention that, and people don't think about it. Maybe you shouldn't mount something that weighs more than a full water bottle to the things that are inserted into your frame. So this is definitely, I think, a lot more secure. Or a much better option if you do want to mount heavier stuff to your frame. So I like it. My seal of approval. And you can.
I have a random one.
Yeah.
This is just kind of industry tangent, if you will. This one's from, well, it's not from Pink Bike. Pink Bike just has comments on it. It's just weird. Pink Bike's a weird place. I think we all know that. There's definitely a lot of good wit on there from some of the commentators and, you know, there have been some good stories from time to time. Not super stoked that, you know, Outside runs it now and all that stuff. But anyway, that's not really the point of this. They're talking about the video that Seth Spike Hacks, I think that's the YouTube channel, the super famous YouTuber.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I've watched plenty of his videos. I like the guy. You know, he does community stuff. You know, he clearly gets paid by some companies to review stuff, which is fine. Like, yeah, it's fine. But he I think has pretty creative content, and I think it's targeted at a whole bunch of people from mostly more beginner level person who's getting into the industry and just doesn't know about stuff, but he does all kinds of cool stuff. You know, he tries to make like a Walmart bike as nice as it can be. And, you know, he talks about geometry and he's a sharp dude and he's very articulate in the things that he does. But anyway, I like his channel. But the amount of hate on Pink Bike for this dude is like crazy. The comments are just like vicious at this guy. Because the whole video was how he essentially, he didn't get scammed, but someone essentially stole his identity to interface with companies under the false pretense that he is Seth and saying, hey, I'm Seth, I want to review your product. And then that company would send the product to this guy's house, who is not Seth, right? So like he's using the influence of this multi-million viewer YouTube channel to get product that doesn't belong to him, basically, if that makes sense. I probably did not articulate
that. Let me articulate
well.
It better. Seth, an established YouTube personality who is very welcoming and is not an elitist douchebag like most of the assholes on the internet are, for better or for worse, is known by everyone. And everyone happens to include Jim Fuckoff, who reached out to a bunch of companies and was like, yo, I'm Seth, send me one of your bikes to review. And yep. Jim Fuckoff received a number of bicycles that were intended to go to Seth, and by impersonating Seth, Jim Fuckoff got a bunch of bikes that don't belong to him and sold a bunch of them and got busted with a bunch of them.
So a couple things. One is I hope, you know, Jim Fuckoff gets actually literally, figuratively, financially, prison-wise, like kicked in the fucking balls. So hopefully that goes through and he is prosecuted properly, because that's insane. Like, I mean, that's, you know, not only identity theft, essentially, but also like you're scamming companies. So anyway, but what's crazy to me about this, and you know, that video was interesting to watch, and it's really true that there's not much you can usually do as an end user if this happens to you, maybe not on this scale, but like, yeah, if you lost money to something in some email scam, like no one gives a fuck. No one will do anything about it. It's a shame, really. But anyway, it's just wild to me, the hate on Pink Bike for this dude. It just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But everyone on Pink Bike also hates Pink Bike because, you know, they don't like the writers anymore, which I get. But hey, they're putting out content. And, you know, I don't know, you're not, other than a witty comment here and there. So, like, what the fuck? And I just don't understand the hate for this dude. Just weird. That's all.
Because dudes on the internet don't like successful dudes on the internet.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable assessment.
Well, another thing, Kenny, is, do you ever have someone come to your shop and then they're like, holy shit, y'all actually took the time to talk to me and like explain things to me and now I'm your customer for life?
For sure.
You know those people went to another shop where the employees are Pink Bike commenters, right? Like, this industry is fucking terrible. Like, I've been in the bike industry my entire adult life, and the amount of idiots and assholes and entitled pompous fucks that I've met, and the people that are listening to this are like, wow, Matt, you're one of the most opinionated fucks I've ever met, and I listen to this just because I listen out of spite and you're a dickhead and Chris Kokalis tried getting you fired once. That shit's all true, but I need you to understand that when I come here and I sit at my fancy microphone with my purple towel so my fingers don't rattle too much on my kitchen table here, that's really just a recording and plant zone. Like, I come here to tell you the shit that you don't hear or read or see other places. But when you come into the bike shop and you're all like timid and you're like, oh gosh, I'm just like, don't worry about it, I'll help you fix your shit. And I don't even say that. I'm like, yeah, we can help you with that, no problem. And I put on my customer service voice and I smile and I take their American currency and I fix their bike and I teach them things. And like the other day,
and I just want to interject here that what Matt just said might sound like he's, I don't know, like talking down to the customer behind their back, sort of like, yeah, some idiot walked in and I was really nice to them and I helped them. That's not the case. Like when Matt helps someone like that, he comes home and he's like, it was a great day at work because I got to help someone who was really intimidated and had bad experiences in other places, and they came in and I got to help them, and I'm really happy about it.
I got the best one. I made this lady's day yesterday. Funniest thing ever. Dude comes in at 11 o'clock and he's like, I think I'm going to buy this bike. At 3 o'clock, this, and he's like, I'm going to think things over. And at 3 o'clock, this lady and the little boy comes in. They're like, she's like, well, I don't think we can get daddy a new bike for his birthday. We don't know which one he wants. And he's like, I want to get daddy a bike. And he's like, she's like, I don't know, honey. We don't know which one he wants. And just making a joke, I was like, oh, who's dad? We might know what bike he wants. She's like, so-and-so. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. And I was like, he was just in here earlier. We know what he wants. She's like, yeah, I'm just going to get him a gift card. Like, I know he's going to buy a bike, but I'm just going to get him a gift card. And it was like, she's like, oh, can you print a picture of it? And I was like, yeah. She's like, all right, I just need to figure out how to wrap this. And I was like, wait a minute. And I went and I grabbed a little cardboard box and I jammed it full. We have a metal recycling can that people can grab things out to make like art with, or we dump it in the local recycling guy's, like, you know, old washing machine every once in a while. I stuffed a bunch of that stuff in there, and then I came back and I washed my hands because it was all greasy, or all that stuff was greasy. And then I taped the, and she's like kind of confused, but like hanging out with her kid, they're shopping bells and stuff, they're going to get him a physical thing too. And I taped a picture of the bike to the box of parts. And then when I made her a gift card, I taped the gift card to the outside, like on top of the picture. And I'd like totally encase the picture in packing tape. So when he unwrapped it, he couldn't accidentally rip it off. And I was like, I really need, she's like, this is amazing. I was like, I really need you to play this up. She's like, how? I was like, as you're giving him these things, be like, the guys at the bike shop told me you really need this. The guys at the bike shop told me you really need this. And I shook it and it like is all jingly because it's like 3 old rotors and 5 old chains or something. And I handed it to her. I was like, it's even kind of heavy. And she's like, oh my God. She's like, can I buy you something next door from Sweetie's? I was like, don't take this the wrong way, but when he comes and buys this bike, we'll be taken care of. And it was just like awesome because, you know, she wasn't stressed, but like that was just like the simplest, you know, I don't know. I like helping people.
And the douchebag.
I think we all like helping people. I think that's very apparent. Like, truly, I enjoy it. I enjoy having someone who is new to the sport and sticks with the bike shop, and you see them through multiple bikes and all kinds of questions, and all of a sudden they're super well versed and they become opinionated on their own and all that good stuff. Like, that's great. I like that stuff. I guess this is a really, really far stretch. Where were you going with this, Matt?
I mean, I'm an asshole on the internet. I'm really nice in real life.
And well, what I was going to say is the douchebag commenter on Pink Bike that works in a bike shop is not going to do that kind of shit at all.
I don't know. Maybe it just bums me out a tiny bit. That's all. It's that I respect anyone for the most part who is successful. Like, Seth has built a brand and an identity and all that stuff. And I think maybe you're right. Maybe people are intimidated by that and they don't like it when other people are successful. I love it when people around me are successful. I think that's freaking awesome.
I don't think it.
And it's just weird to me that people bag on this dude so much. It's just weird. It's not like he's given bad information. Almost all the information that I've ever seen on his channel is like really well documented and researched. And he usually comes to like pretty cool conclusions that you might not actually come to. Did I lose you?
No, I agree with you. And I started to Google something because I'm a bad person.
Well, anyway, that's the moral of the story, is Pink Bike giveth and taketh away. They can have some pretty witty people and some hilarious comments, and then people can be raging douchebags.
I think it's like a vast majority of dudes on the internet are just like that. We want to move on. I'd like, for whatever reason, Bicycle Retailer just posted on, well, it's today, January 8th, that P&W Components is recalling Loam Gen 2 pedals because of a defective axle, which is a recall that Bike Rumor posted on November 18th. So, just your reminder that if you have Loam Gen 2 pedals, you can get a new set of axles for those pedals, because some of them, the heat treating was bad and they can crack. They've had reports of 4 cracked axles with no injuries.
And this is only the aluminum pedal, not the composite pedal.
But yeah, you all should already know that. But Bicycle Retailer decided that today was the day to report that more than month old information. And last one I've got is that the Fox Transfer Neo wireless seat post is now available in 225 length.
Damn, that's a big bitch.
I was making a joke with the guys at the shop today about that because someone read me that article. And I was thinking, why not make a 300 mil dropper? And they need to call it Super Monster? What was the Monster T? I think Monster T. The Marzocchi that was 300 mil. That crazy fork. I think it was called the Super Monster T or something crazy. Anyway, 300 mil dropper. Someone needs to make one.
Oh, speaking of cool shit, I forgot to mention this. I got a suppressor for my AR-15.
Boost Monster.
That's really... it's called the Boost Monster. I thought it was called something different. Interesting.
Oh, the right. Bike was the Boost Monster. It's a Super Monster T. Sorry.
There we go.
That is
heck
a
yeah.
ridiculous
Super
looking
Monster
fork
T.
right there.
That's what a fork looks like with 300 mils of travel. And everyone's homework, if you haven't seen that fork, is go Google it. It is hilarious.
It is pretty funny looking.
Oh, I know. Look at that right there. Open bath moto cartridge. They just did it with a moto fork.
Well, all the Marzocchi stuff was open bath. That's why it was like awesome and it actually worked. They were one of the first people to have a like fairly user serviceable full oil bath fork. And it was just open bath. That's why like the original Marzocchi Z1 was so awesome.
Hmm. Well.
So Andrea, you got a...
Oh yeah, I got a suppressor.
You got a pew-pew suppressor. Yeah. Did you take advantage of the new 2026 stuff?
Honestly, like... Okay, and I explained to the guy, like, for whatever reason, I have no idea why, like, the dude that there's like one dude I always end up talking to at the gun shop. His name's Cody. He's like super nice. And he also from Tennessee, which I think is maybe one of the reasons why we, I don't know, get along or something. And all the people in there are extremely nice. But he likes, you know, I went in and I'm like, I want to get a suppressor for my AR. It's the gun that I use for mountain lion hunting. So it is actually a hunting gun. And he's like, oh, you know, do you want this or this or this? And I'm like, look, I was like, my experience with firearms has mostly been just when I want to hunt. Like in the past, my dad gave me a gun and was like, let's, you know, we're going to practice. I'll show you how to clean it, show you how it works. Outside of what I've actually touched and held on to, I don't know shit. So... I was like, this is what I want. I need something that is as short as possible and as light. You know, light is like secondary. Well, it needs to be as reliable. It's number one because I'm mountain lion hunting. And while they normally are very scared of humans, if one decided all of a sudden that it was not scared of me, my weapon has to work. It has to fire as many times as I have bullets and it cannot jam. You know, it needs to be there to protect me if I need it. And then it needs to be short because I'm dragging it through bushes. And that's the reason why I have such a small and light gun is because it's going to get just pretty much bushwhacked through the forest. And he's like, oh.
Is yours? Okay.
So technically, yes. I cannot, if I don't have a muzzle brake or a suppressor on it, I legally cannot have it put together as a whole gun.
Okay, so you're gonna get it where, like, with the suppressor on, it will be legal length.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, very cool.
So that's...
We don't need to get in the weeds on that, and people are probably rolling their eyes right now, but are you allowed... There's so many crazy rules, by the way. Like, it is absolutely insane. If you put a slightly different stock on a gun, all of a sudden, it's like a humongous problem.
Yeah.
It's
really...
We have really, really strange laws. On one hand, very lax, but on the other hand... The
oddly
line in the sand
sometimes.
Is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Like to an untrained person, if you put pictures of two of these guns, one that's illegal in like six different ways and you're going to go to prison for 20 years next to one that's fully legal and you posted that and had the general population of the world look at those two guns and say like, which one's illegal? Nobody would fucking know. Like zero idea.
Right.
Which is absolutely insane. But anyway, continue with your...
But yeah,
story.
So like I was just like, yeah, I want... It doesn't have to be the quietest because I just want to be able to like, you know, if I'm practicing, I'm going to have hearing protection on. And if I'm hunting, I'm hopefully only shooting it like once or twice. And
by the way, sorry to go on another tangent. I will let you finish, okay. I promise. But typically when you hunt, Do you just deal with it? Like the one or two shots that you take, you just take it no ear pro and you just take full blast to your ear holes and that's just
how
it has to be?
It's literally like I know with my, I haven't looked at like the actual data on my, the one I just bought, but like the one I have for my like long range, you know, like deer elk hunting rifle, it's whatever, like the decibel level is like right, like just a few decibels below what would be considered to give you hearing damage. Or
oh, so this is not your first suppressor?
No, this is my second one.
Okay, well, that's very cool. I didn't realize that. But what I'm saying is from a utilitarian standpoint, like from a hunting standpoint, most of the time you're just chilling out. It's not like you like, I'm going to go hunt today. And it's like, I'm now at my hunting place and now I'm going to take my shot and then I'm going to go home. It doesn't work like that. Like most of the time you're walking around, you're doing things. Like it's so convenient to not always have hearing protection in. So when you just take a random shot, all of a sudden you freaking blow your ear holes out, you know, like a 7 mag deer rifle, like good Lord.
Oh yeah. Like it'll make your ears ring.
Absolutely.
Like
loud.
Just a, like my normal hunting rifle, like shooting that once, like your ears ring for an hour or two for sure. Like it's not good for you. And that's probably why.
Yeah.
Like
so,
that, you know, when I was a kid, I never, like my dad would take me duck hunting. We never wore hearing protection. You know, you're shooting kind of a lot of times when you duck hunt, but yeah, you.
What I'm getting at is suppressors from a utilitarian standpoint are like really very useful.
Yeah.
And like from a hunting standpoint, wow, like everybody should have a suppressor. It's not this weird, scary, clandestine movie thing. It's like just so much more convenient to use that thing. You're going to piss off less people around you. You're going to piss off and freak out less wildlife when you do shoot it, and you're also not going to make yourself go deaf.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and like, so like the AR for mountain lion hunting, like shooting that, I shot it, I have shot that gun exactly one time without hearing protection before I had the suppressor, and I never wanted to do it again. Like I started carrying, I would safety pin like the little earplugs on a cord. I would safety pin those to the inside of my hat so that if I was going to shoot, I could stick them in my ears.
Ours are nasty
and it
loud,
would like,
unsuppressed.
Yeah, and it was like, it would give you a concussion. Like, it was fucking violent. And I shot it once without, you know, without any earplugs with the suppressor, and it's still, like, kind of loud. But, yeah, like, it's definitely tolerable, and it...
But you're not going to get instant permanent hearing loss from one shot with a suppressor.
Yeah, so it's definitely like you can shoot it, you know, two or three times and you're going to be fine. Whereas before that, like if you shot three times in a row with no hearing protection, you would literally have decreased the amount of noise you could hear for the rest of your life. Like it was really, really violent and like uncomfortable, like to the rest, to like your head, like you would feel like you had a concussion. So, yeah, like it's... It's definitely the way to go in this scenario. So I'm pretty stoked about it. And it should snow tonight, and I'm going to mountain lion hunt the next couple days. Hopefully we get enough snow that it doesn't...
Were you able to take advantage of the no tax stamp for 26?
I bought mine last month, so I actually paid for a tax stamp just because I knew that so many...
It's not a huge deal, but also if you try to get one now, they're probably all sold out.
Yeah, exactly. So... Yeah, I just wanted to go ahead and get it because I didn't want to worry about like a long wait time or stuff selling out or whatever.
Very cool. And you don't need to go into details if you don't want to, but did you do the trust thing or just to yourself?
No, it's just myself.
I think they're changing rules on that going forward too. I think it's going to be not as big of a deal anymore, so.
Yeah.
Not positive.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. Well, cool. Yeah, it's like one of those things I don't really keep up with. I know that I'm legal and it's legal and like Matt can shoot it as long as I'm... I don't know the exact stipulation, but I have to be, like, present and...
You have to be, like, in control of it in some fashion. As in, like, you need to be, like, near it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, at the same range type thing. Or if you're both hunting and he's using one of your guns, that's completely fine. But if Matt decides to, like, you know, go drive to Utah with it without you, that would be a problem.
Yeah, that you wouldn't want to do that. Or if you did, you would want to like drive the speed limit the whole way.
So if also for those people that don't know out there or maybe don't live in the U.S. or maybe live in the U.S. and aren't into guns and are wondering what the hell we're talking about, things like suppressors are, and I'm going to say all this terminology wrong, but essentially they are registered in a way where they are registered to you. And it's a very above and beyond process that is super involved with all kinds of, you know, fingerprints and identification. And it's way beyond what it takes to buy a gun to get a suppressor. And
you get like a federal background check. Like they send your mugshot and it looks like a mugshot. Like my picture that they
took. It's a passport photo.
So like
it's supposed to be a passport
photo. Like they took my picture at the gun shop. And I had been, like, for the first one, and I'd been, like, out. I don't know if I'd been scouting or what, but I was fucking haggard when I went in there. I was, like, sunburned.
She looks like the last person that should own any firearm in that photo.
That photo, it looks like I literally took a mugshot of myself and took it there and was like, I want to buy a suppressor with this mugshot.
Do you remember those? I only saw them in Memphis. They were, like, the mugshot newspaper things you could buy.
Yeah,
it looks
shit. What was that? That was so
it was like,
good.
I'm gonna
oh
make it up,
God.
But it was like Street Beat, like mugs or some shit, you know. And it looks like one of those.
But
photos.
it was like a daily or weekly publication. It just showed all the people that got arrested in Memphis and what they did and had their mugshot. Yeah. It was freaking hilarious.
And look, I know that a lot of women will be like, "Oh, that's a terrible picture of me," and it's like maybe not the best, but it's not terrible. This is a really fucking
this
bad
bitch
photo.
Looked like she had just come down from a 3-day bender and like crawled out from behind a dumpster and was like, yeah, I'll go take my photo now.
It was so bad.
Well, apparently that does
yeah,
not
like
matter.
When Cody was looking up my information, Matt, I didn't tell you this. So Cody, dude at the gun shop when I was shopping suppressors and I'm checking out and he's like, "We have your information here already." I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "Don't look at the photo. It's so bad." He's like, "Oh, no one's photo is good." And then I see him like smirk a little bit. And I'm like, "Yeah, I told you it was bad."
That's really funny. So do you know, we don't need to go too into the minutiae here. I'm just curious since we're talking about it. Do you have to do anything specific to make the suppressor like difficult to remove? Or does it have to get tack welded on there? Or like, what do they require to make it be the way that it is as far as the overall length of the barrel?
Well, so
is it just one thing where it's just your honor code where you should just never unthread that thing and then you're
fine? Yeah, so as long as the like a really easy solution for this would be if it has two spanners and you just tighten it up, and if you don't have the spanners with you, you can't take it off. You know, I think it's one of those deals where it's so dumb that I think it being installed is fine because, like, if it was
installed normally,
well, if it was shorter, it would be easier to move around, but it would be louder, you know? Like,
by the way, so just to show everyone in the world how ridiculous this is, you have to do all this crazy above the top stuff to get a suppressor. You got to pay a bunch of money in a tax, you have to pay a bunch of money for the suppressor, you got to wait like. Could be a week, could be 6 months. Like, it's just how it works. So you do all this stuff. You now have this on your gun and you are now legal. And now if you take that off of your gun, now your gun is illegal.
Pretty much.
Think about that for a second.
It's
how the fuck does that work?
Yeah, it's pretty silly. And people, it actually like the rule is vague enough that when I first bought that gun, they're like, well, because the you want to do like the short barrel on it, we have to peen the muzzle brake onto the end of the barrel so that it's permanently installed. And then when I got the suppressor, they're like, actually, we don't have to do that. You just shouldn't take the suppressor off. So
interesting.
Yeah, like
but did when you got yours, did it come with a pistol brace instead of a stock?
No, it's 100%. Like it's a, I actually bought the gun originally with like a different, it was chambered in a different caliber. And then I was like, you know, for mountain lion hunting, I want to do a slightly smaller, you know, like the general 223, which this is way too much detail for our purposes. But like I changed the caliber to a smaller caliber. And at that time I got the shorter barrel. So it was already like a normal legal length rifle. And then I just, when I changed calibers, I put a shorter barrel on it. And yeah, that's when one person's like, we have to peen a muzzle brake on. And then like this time they were like, oh, we don't actually have to do that.
Gotcha. No, it's all interesting stuff because I want to do that to a few of my things. And I guess I just didn't realize, because again, God, it's just navigating all these rules is so bizarre.
It is bizarre.
I just didn't realize that. I didn't realize that the overall length with the suppressor was considered a thing. I thought the second that you cut a rifle below 16 or whatever that number is, that now all of a sudden it is an SBR no matter what.
Yeah, apparently not. So that's
well, it technically would be.
We're getting way.
Well, again, nothing is an SBR until it's actually installed on the gun. Like if the gun is that way, it's just so funny too. Like you're at some point that gun for 10 seconds is illegal. Like as it's being built up and you're putting all the stuff together and you're threading your suppressor on for like 10 seconds, you are federally fucked. It is just so bizarro.
It is weird. And like, just, yeah, for our listeners outside of the United States, yes, in America, you can have as many guns as you want. And we have extraordinarily lax gun laws.
And everyone dies in gun-related
stuff. And I'm not saying that's I'm absolutely not saying that's the best thing and that's how it should be. But then you also have some really fucking weird, strict stuff that you have to follow outside of the very lax gun laws. It's odd.
Yeah, really weird. Yeah. Like, yeah, your magazine has to have the correct capacity depending on what state you live in. And that varies from state to state. And if you have a concealed carry permit, it's good in a lot of states, but not others. And if your barrel is the wrong length in certain circumstances, if your stock looks a certain way, it's legal versus illegal. And, you know, having a suppressor is a huge amount of work, but you can like sort of like move it around and take it to other states and stuff. But an SBR is like somehow different, even
an
though
SBR,
they both have the same tax stamp
on them. For anyone who doesn't realize.
No one gives a fuck. We should move on.
SBR means short-barreled rifle, and it's a... I forgot the exact length, but yeah, it's a rifle that's short enough to be more concealable. So yeah, that's what it means.
Anyway, yeah, there's crazy rules, but anyway, that is interesting. I think it would be amazing in general if suppressors were more easily attainable and legal. Not that they are illegal, but you have to go through a lot of hoops to make it legal. Because, yeah, I think it just makes it a lot better for a lot more people.
Yep. We did have some listener questions, but I think we've been recording long enough that we can just...
go to bed.
So we'll save those for next week. So if you would like to join our Patreon, go to patreon.com/justridingalong. And I'm going to read off our patrons who donate $10 a month or more. So we've got Kurt, Skunk in Your Trap, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds Crusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taper War Pro, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans, Free Gabe Horn, Cam Irish One, Zach, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, My Name is Clayton, Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Tom's P, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Carmenin Cider, Ty, Noah, Cool Beans, Matt's Church Bell, Oliver Close Off, Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Tom P, Butt Stuff, Them Kitty Cat Jelly Beans, at $11.11 per month, Pierced Titties, Taste Like Car Keys, Patamelon Disco Paul at 14 Australian, Dean at 16.50 Australian, and at $20 a month. We have Brian, Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench at $26.06 per month, Pocket Full of Marmot, Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, now offering discounted Venezuelan fishing boat tours. It's a blast! At Fitty. Thank you, Six Pack Outdoors, for the constant entertainment in our patron names. All right, are you guys... ready to shut it down?
Absolutely.
I think most people probably stopped listening around about an hour whenever we really started talking too much about firearms and suppressors and whatnot.
I mean, I guess so. But like, even if you're not hugely into it, I think understanding maybe how it all works, whether you agree with it or not, is interesting because it's really crazy and complicated.
Yeah. Most of the laws just stem from the fact that there's a subset of Americans that think that they can form a militia and take on the U.S. government, which has weapons that would, I don't know, surpass anything you could imagine. But
yeah, it's hard to take on a you know, a full-size drone. And when I mean that, I mean not like
one this
what like a quadcopter drone. I mean one that has like jet engines on it and shoots Hellfire missiles or whatever the fuck they shoot. Yeah, there's not much you're going to do about that.
Until they realize that, we can own whatever firearms we want as long as the barrels are long enough.
There you go.
All right, everyone.
Short barrels are scary. Long barrels are not scary.
All right, well, if that's all we've got, we will shut it down for the night. You guys ready?
All right, bye.
Shut it down.
Thank you all for listening, and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your pants.